Coming up on today's Next Fan Up podcast, Vikings at Lions, that's like the sweet potatoes. Redskins at Cowboys, that's the main course. And the Steelers and the Colts, I don't think that's dessert. That's more like the let's go to bed. Who knows? Let's talk about it right now.
Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next Fan Up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to the Thanksgiving Day edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. No, it's not Thanksgiving Day. It's the day before. But we're only going to be talking about the Thanksgiving Day. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can't talk already. And it's the day before Thanksgiving. But in any case, we're only talking about the Thanksgiving Day games today. The rest of the slate we will air tomorrow, right around kickoff of the first game on Thanksgiving. So you'll have that to be thankful for. And I'm thankful that I have two super fans here with me right now. And let me bring them in. That is James, our Texans super fan and resident Game of Thrones expert. Hello, James.
Feliz el día de la gracias, Pod Vader. Oh, wait a minute. We're not in Mexico anymore. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you today?
I'm doing well. And our other super fan joining us is Pat, our Patriot super fan. Hello, Pat.
Hey, you know, my Spanish is so bad that I thought he was like speaking Targaryen.
You know, I almost made the same joke, although I was going with something else. But in any case,
well, mine was more a confession than a joke, but it's good to talk to you guys.
I was going to say you live at least near the birthplace of Thanksgiving, as you're from the greater Boston area, and James being our Game of Thrones expert, perhaps there may have been some sort of feast that they celebrated in the medieval times that would represent something similar to Thanksgiving.
Oh, absolutely. I believe it was called the Red Wedding. Sometimes you can check it out.
Yes, there's so many different ways I could go there that I'm going to skip over because, you know, we're trying to live in a time of love that will trump hate.
I see what you did there. See what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I'm going to have enough of this to deal with on Thanksgiving with, you know, my in-laws. I don't need to hear it today.
Trust me, I just threw up in my mouth when I said all of that. Hey, we want to hear from you. NextFanUp@gmail.com. You can also tweet us at NFU Podcast and check out all of our previews. All the superfans write up previews, or at least they're supposed to be. And those are at nextfanup.wordpress.com. Also our Facebook page, facebook.com/NFU Podcast. We're going to start here in order on Thanksgiving. We have the Minnesota Vikings at the Detroit Lions. I was trying to make a sense of when the last time the Lions were in a relatively important game on Thanksgiving. And James, before the show, was like, it was like just last year or two seasons ago. I was like, thanks, James. You're not helping me because I don't know. I still think the Lions are that team that that stinks. And clearly they're proving us wrong this year. And look it. Just like the relatives at Thanksgiving, Monty, our Raiders superfan, shows up late. Hello, Monty.
Yeah, bud. Rum, bum, 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 bum. Hello.
So, James, tell me why the Lions aren't the team that's supposed to stink this year.
Because they play in the NFC North, which is only marginally better than the AFC South. So they didn't really have to get any better. They just failed to get worse, which when you think of the Lions, they are quite good at failing. But no, I mean, Stafford finally looks to have developed. And, you know, there's a big narrative around how Calvin Johnson was actually holding him back. That seemed to have played out a little bit in the beginning of the season when Marvin Jones was everybody's I told you so fantasy player.
By the way, Calvin Johnson, that guy that placed third on Dancing with the Stars?
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly he just did not have the heart or the desire. Surprised he didn't retire early from Dancing with the Stars.
That's well done.
So I was trying to work in a catch joke somewhere, but I stumbled. So the Lions' rushing attack has fallen off.
Down?
Yeah, failed to get the feet down. There you go. Lions' rushing attack has struggled as of late. We got a pretty good look at them down in Houston a couple weeks ago, and they seem to have a similar mentality of the Texans that we're not going to go out and lose the game, at least in the three quarters. And then they have enough offensive firepower to come back in the fourth quarter, which makes it at least an exciting team. And then on the other side of the ball with Minnesota, you know, they came into the season with a hopefully average offensive line, and then they just started losing offensive linemen. The solution to that, as we've mentioned, was to bring in brittle Sam Bradford, who has held up nicely so far this year, but has played down to the level of Sam Bradford. So it should at least be an entertaining game. In the end, though, I think the home team gets it. The Detroit Lions have something to be thankful for, as I believe they play for first place of the NFC North.
Yes, this game is for all the marbles in the NFC North. You mentioned that rushing attack. Amir Abdullah was put on injury reserve. Theo Riddick is questionable, so the Lions' rushing attack doesn't look to be getting any healthier. But, you know, the Vikings also don't have a rushing attack. Word is Adrian Peterson might be able to play in the last month of the season, but that obviously won't help them on Thursday. Patrick, what are your thoughts here on the Vikings-Lions?
That whole team is just its defense. You know, its offense can't really do much of anything, whereas Detroit, I got pulled into a trolling conversation like a sucker, you know, last week, and did a statistical analysis on the fumbles per touch of every team. If you're a conspiracy nut and you think the Patriots have been cheating, then Detroit is seriously cheating, because they're like four times better than the average team in terms of fumbling. Like, they're just not turning the ball over. So, I mean, if they're that secure with the football and Minnesota's really reliant on defense, I don't see how Minnesota stands much of a chance.
By the way, this is the second time in NFL history and the first time since 1935 in which the Thanksgiving Day schedule has at least three games and every team has a 500 or better record, which I think is a little surprising considering we're talking about the Vikings and the Lions. I don't think we saw the Lions as being above 500. I saw the Vikings as being probably at about 500 at this point, as I hated the Vikings. But that hate was misplaced. I've come back. Although Vikings also only won for their last five here, Monty.
Yeah, the Vikings definitely have been struggling. I don't know what happened to their defense. I thought that defense was tops in the league, and it's tough to win games if you're relying on your defense to score one or two touchdowns every game. I don't hate the Vikings. I think Stephon Diggs has made some good plays. Kyle Rudolph is good. They just need to kind of get everything together and be consistent. And I think the biggest problem that you guys have already hit on is their offensive line. I think they texted me earlier this week to see if I was available, but I'm hanging out with the family for Thanksgiving, so I had to pass. So I don't know who they've got playing tackle for them on Thanksgiving this week.
Well, the last time these two teams played was not all that long ago. It was November 6th, and the Lions won that game in overtime thanks to Matt Prater converting a game-tying 58-yard field goal as time expired in regulation. I'm going to go with the Lions here because they're at home. They're used to playing on Thanksgiving. Of course, they're also used to losing on Thanksgiving, but that's when their team was horrible. And this year, they're just not as horrible as the rest of the teams. I don't buy that the Vikings, and again, this could be my hate bias, I don't buy that the Vikings are back. I don't think they've righted the ship. I think their win against the Cardinals is more that the Cardinals, their ship is sinking. And so I'm going to take the Lions here. BetDSI, by the way, our sponsor, has a -2.5 for the Lions. And so I'm going to take the Lions at home. Our next game is the Washington Redskins at the Dallas Cowboys, and we have a super fan back.
So here we are. It's Neil, Washington Redskins fan, super fan, and Kevin's here, Dallas Cowboys super fan, for the second game on the Thursday night Thanksgiving slate of games. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you first, Kevin. And we've got Washington traveling up to Big D to play the Dallas Cowboys, looking for a bit of revenge after, well, the game we had back in week two, which seems almost a lifetime ago, Kevin. But surely these are two totally different teams to what they were in week two.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Week two seems like ages ago. And Cowboys, in my opinion, were actually lucky to come out of that game with a win. Going into this game, we were briefly discussing before we started recording, we would wish Pod let us talk for 30 minutes on this game because it's way more interesting, you know, than the rest of the league, the NFC East. So the Cowboys, their last two Thanksgiving games, how should I put it nicely here? They've been rocked. They failed to show up to play in 2014, 2015 Thanksgiving Day games. So I'm hoping that's not the case this Thursday. And I'm especially hoping it because Jay Gruden's already complaining about the schedule and he's sounding like a whiny little kid, but whatever. But on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I think we got lucky that we were playing the Ravens last week because we started out of the gate really slow. And if we start off that slow against Kirk Cousins and this offense, the Cowboys could find themselves in a 10-0, 14-0 hole. And that's exactly what the Redskins want, because it will be difficult for the Cowboys to then stick to their running game, which is obviously their bread and butter. And Dak will, I'm not going to say be forced to carry the team on his back for the first time, but if the Redskins get off to a fast start, that's exactly what Dak's going to need to do. Statistically, you guys aren't that good. But the Redskins just always give the Cowboys a problem with their blitzes. I mean, the last 2 years, I can, like, on Monday night last year, Kirk Cousins and the Cowboys were stuck in a defensive battle, and neither defenses were good last year. And 2014 Monday night, our offensive line just couldn't handle your blitz. Romo got hurt that game, and we lost that game to Colt McCoy. So no matter really what the Redskins' record is, they always give us problems on the defensive side of the ball, I feel. And the Redskins are just a way better team this year than they have been.
Okay, what did the Ravens do last week to sort of shut you down in that first quarter?
I mean, they shut down our running game. Ezekiel Elliott only had 26 yards rushing in the first half. And going into that game, I thought we could have a little bit of problem. The Ravens have a very nice rush defense. They were ranked number one going into last week. And Ezekiel didn't go over 100 yards. So he sort of was held in check the whole game. But Thursday, if Ezekiel Elliott has 26 yards rushing in the first half, I can guarantee you the score won't be 10-10. It'll more likely be along the lines of something 24-10 Redskins.
And did the Ravens stack the box, or were they just particularly good in their sort of base formation, or did stick extra guys
occasionally
in there?
Occasionally they did bring extra guys in there, but I mean, with Brandon Williams and CJ Mosley and their emerging young players like what's his name, Timmy Jernigan, they have the pieces. Yeah. They had the pieces to compete with the Cowboys, and that's exactly what they did for the first half. But in the third quarter, the Cowboys they ran it more effectively, and they were able to control time and possession. And then in the fourth quarter, we sort of had, at that point, wore the Ravens defense down because we possessed the clock for 10 minutes in the third quarter. So we were able to have a little bit more success in the fourth quarter just because the Ravens defense was gassed at that point. They were on the field so much in the third quarter. I'm about to ask you about the Packers, Redskins. I just saw today that actually Matt Jones, Rob Kelly had three touchdowns. So I actually fell asleep during that game because I was so tired. But what are some of the key points from the Redskins Packers game that you think the Redskins can build on to hopefully come away with a victory against the Cowboys? Well, hopefully for you, not for me.
Yeah, I think actually you absolutely nailed it there at the start where you said Washington has to get into the lead, maybe a 10-point lead early to try to reduce the impact of your great run game. And I think against Green Bay, we saw how we can do that. Kelly's been a bit of a surprise. I think everybody expected Matt Jones to have a great season, but the guy just couldn't hold on to the ball. And you can't have that in the NFL. Turnovers just kill you. So he's a healthy scratch at the moment, and I doubt he'll get back into the starting lineup unless Kelly gets injured. But what Kelly does is that he's one of those backs who, if you give him a 2 yard a hole, which is going to get him a couple of yards, he'll fight for that extra couple of yards, and he's been doing that on a consistent basis. And he sort of takes the the pressure off the passing game, which we know is Washington's great strength. So if he can get any semblance of a running game going against you guys, get some drives going, I do think Kirk Cousins has the ability and has the, and more importantly perhaps has the weapons in the two tight ends and the and three receivers to attack your secondary. And I wanted to ask you about I think it's Skandrick. Is Skandrick out or is he in? And is Barry Church out?
No, Skandrick is in. It's Barry Church and Mo Claiborne who are going to be out for this game, and they've been out for 3 weeks now. This will be their fourth game missed this coming Thursday, and our secondary has definitely noticeably been worse since they both got hurt against the Packers in week 6 or 7, whatever it was. I completely agree with you. Kirk Cousins is more than capable. In fact, he will shred the Cowboys secondary. I don't see the Cowboys holding him to under 275 yards passing. I really don't. As you were saying, you guys have weapons all over the field, and the last few weeks the Cowboys have been struggling to cover the middle of the field. And with the likes of Jordan Reed and the emerging Jamison Crowder, that's just a recipe for disaster for us. And DeSean Jackson's always a good bet to stretch the field. So I really am very concerned about the Cowboys' defense this game. I think it's going to be our biggest challenge yet. And you were talking about Rob Kelly earlier, and you were hoping that he can find some semblance of a running game. I mean, the Cowboys' rush defense, if you just look at it, is ranked 3rd overall in the NFL. But that's a complete facade. Last week, they gave up over 6 yards per carry to the Ravens, but the Ravens, for whatever reason, only ran the ball 15 times. And in the second half, they completely abandoned the run. I thank them for that, but God knows why they did it. And Rob Kelly, the last 3 weeks, has had carries, 21 carries, 22 carries, and 24 carries. So the Redskins seem to be pretty committed to feeding him the rock. So if he has another 20-plus carry game, he will go over 100 yards. So the Redskins offense is just petrifying to me. I don't really see how the Cowboys can stop them. I mean, I do know how they can stop them, and that's if Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys stay on the field for 40 minutes. But going into a game and having that, the mindset, that's always a scary thought for me.
Yeah, I don't see – when I'm thinking about this game and I'm trying to think positively about it, you know what it's like as a fan, you think all the worst things possible that could happen.
Of course.
when you try and think about it positively, what I see is a Washington team that can score quickly and can score heavily. We saw that against Green Bay. You know, every time Aaron Rodgers got the ball and drove his team down the field for a touchdown or so, we could respond almost instantaneously with our own touchdown. Now, I know your defense is better than Green Bay's, but I don't see a great pass rush from you guys. And if you don't have a great pass rush against Cousins and get pressure in his face, then
that's a great point. The Cowboys severely lack a pass rush. They've had one or fewer sacks in 5 of their 10 games. They're coming off back-to-back games in which they only recorded one sack in each game. So
what you do have, in fact, what we both have are really good offenses. But we have defenses that, okay, maybe not that great in some aspects, but both defenses have been fairly resolute this the last sort of 5 or 6 weeks, where somehow they've managed to make a key stop at the right moment and get that balance back.
You're completely right. I've been hating on the Cowboys defense for about 5-6 weeks now, and I guess I should give them credit. When they do swarm to the ball, they're very good at gang tackling. They don't miss a lot of tackles, and they do somehow, some way, when it matters most, they make a stop. So I will give them credit there, but it's just hard for me to believe that can continue, just because the Cowboys lack any sort of playmaking ability on the defensive side of the ball. We have 4 interceptions on the year, I think. We have only forced 10 turnovers, so How I know that Trent Murphy and Ryan Kerrigan were playing well earlier in the year. I know Trent Murphy, he actually sacked Dak 2 times in week 2, but how have they been playing recently?
Yeah, they've been playing well. Kerrigan is one of those players who is, I would say, just a half step below elite in terms of his pass rush skills, but he's also one of those players who gives you that just below elite every single week, every single snap. And he's been at times just outstanding against the run and also against the pass. He's the real leader of that defense. Murphy has blown hot and cold. Like you say, he had a couple of sacks against you guys in week 2, and I think he's up around 7 sacks for the season. But he is splitting time and doesn't play as many snaps as Kerrigan. He kind of shares a little bit of time there with Preston Smith, and they kind of go between defensive end and outside linebacker, depending on our formation. So they kind of share a bit of time there. They're both really good players, both young players, both developing players. So we do okay. We tend to average 3 or 4 sacks a game, and we get some pressure. But the key guy for us pressure-wise is probably Chris Baker at the defensive tackle position, although he plays right across the line there. He's our best guy for interior pressure, and I would imagine that between those 3 players, they'll be wanting to get some pressure on Prescott to try and knock him out of rhythm. But it's going to be tough against that absolutely outstanding offensive line you guys have.
I mean, true, our offensive line is outstanding, but I was saying earlier, the Redskins tend to, I don't know so much this year, but in recent years, and I'm pretty sure this year, they blitz the Cowboys, and they do a lot of stunts and double A gap blitzes, and for whatever reason, the Cowboys always have trouble picking it up. So that has me worried. Granted, Dak is much more mobile than Tony is or was the last 3 or 4 years, so that could help avoid some sacks. But I think that the Redskins will apply a decent amount of pressure this game.
We had a situation in the Detroit game a few weeks ago. I think it was a Detroit game. Anyway, we lost that game at the end. Detroit drove down the field, and Joe Barry, our dull as dishwater defensive coordinator, he was just basically dropping everybody and rushing 3 guys. And that's been a bit of a problem for us. He hasn't blitzed. He's tried to get pressure with just rushing 3 or 4, and that hasn't worked at times, and it's cost us games like the Detroit game. Over the last 2 or 3 weeks, however, he has tended to look a little bit more towards the blitz. And he blitzed Sua Cravens, the young linebacker, and often one of the other inside linebackers. That has helped quite a bit at times for us, you know, just to get that little bit extra pressure. And even if we don't get the sack, at least to knock the quarterback out of rhythm and then throw an incompletion. So, yeah, I think you're right, Kevin. And we're going to see that for sure.
I have one more question for you, but I think we should try to wrap this up before we turn this into an all-night affair. week 2, I know that Josh Norman didn't shadow Dez like some people maybe thought he would have, and he, for most of the game, he went up against Breland. Do you see that being the case this week, or is it possible that Norman is going to shadow Dez like he did last year with the Panthers, actually, on Thanksgiving?
I don't think he'll shadow him all the time. What we've seen from Norman is, I mean, remember there was that great sort of media debate about what Norman should be doing in the first couple of weeks of the season. Since then, though, it's kind of quietened down, and he has spent a bit more time on the opposition team's best receiver. I mean, for example, he did follow Jordy Nelson around the field quite a bit on Sunday there, and to good effect. He is a top player. So I think we'll see him on Bryant more than we did in week 2, but not exclusively, I don't think. My concern, actually, I know we've got to wrap this up, but my concern is probably more who's going to cover Cole Beasley. That would be more my concern.
That you raise a good point. I think it could be a good battle of the slot receivers with Crowder and Beasley. I know the Cowboys can't cover slot receivers. So let's just get some an X factor either on the offensive side, defensive side of the ball for you.
Okay, I think on our offense, look for Vernon Davis, tight end. He's had a super season, and when he's got going in the passing game, it's opened up a lot for us. So if he gets going, then the offense will score points. And we mentioned the outside linebacker slash defensive end, Trent Murphy. If he can complement Kerrigan in terms of getting some pressure on Prescott, then I think that could be good news for Washington. What about Dallas? A couple of guys for you?
Yeah, opposite of Trent Murphy, I'm going to say Doug Free is going to be a pretty big X factor here, because for the most part, when the Cowboys struggle protecting the quarterback, it usually comes when opposing defenses attack Doug Free. They usually tend to stay away from Tyron Smith. So if I imagine Trent Murphy and Kerrigan will both be matched up against Free several times throughout the game. So if he can hold his own, that would definitely give the Cowboys a much better chance. On the defensive side of the ball for us, Jack Crawford, who had our lone sack last week, if he can find a way to get any pressure against your backup left tackle, who I know has performed actually pretty well in his last two starts, giving up zero sacks against the likes of like Everson Griffin and Clay Matthews. So I'm not really too optimistic, but Jack Crawford has a high motor. He's one of Marinelli's favorite guys, never quits, 110% on every play. So if he can continue his play from last week, where he, like I said, he did record the only Cowboys sack, I think that would help the Cowboys very much. And then of course I would like to see DeMarcus Lawrence do something.
Okay, well, this is the moment, isn't it, where we through gritted teeth have to give a prediction. I will say Washington will pinch this game 27-24, and get a little bit of revenge for that week two and two good teams splitting the series this year.
I mean, I agree. I think it's definitely going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a little bit higher than that. I don't really have faith that either defense will stop the opposing offenses. So I think Kirk Cousins, one of three quarterbacks this year to have over 3,000 yards so far, will lead the Redskins to 31 points, but Dak and the Cowboys will come away on top with 34 points in a close anxiety-inducing game. hopefully, I can stay awake through the tryptophan and the turkey and all that. But I'm sure I will. Last two Thanksgivings, I've left a sour taste in my mouth. But best of luck to you on Thursday, Neil. Hope the Cowboys win, though.
Thanks, Kevin. Best of luck to you. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, and I hope you get a few bargains on Black Friday in the Dallas Cowboys store.
I will try my best. I'll even look for a Redskins gear for you.
Hey, thanks, man. That's great.
So there you go. A great breakdown there between Neil and Kevin. So we don't really have to break this game down, guys. BetDSI has the Cowboys as 7-point favorites, over under at 51. The 7 points is weird because both Neil and Kevin think this is going to be a close game, and I agree with them. And I like the Redskins to actually pull off an upset here. James.
I'm going to keep the Cowboys. I agree, though, with Neil and Kevin that it's going to be closer than that 7 points.
Patrick.
Yeah, if I generate gambler, I take a hard look at that line. A lot's been said about Dallas not really beating anybody this year. So this will be a good test of their legitimacy. 7 points is kind of a lot.
Who do you got, though?
I mean, I got Dallas, but, like, I don't feel great about it.
Monty.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the home team, but one of these days those quarterbacks going to play like a rookie and make a mistake, and I don't know if the Redskins are going to be the team to do it, but I'll take the home team on Thanksgiving.
All right. Our final Thanksgiving Day game is the Steelers at the Colts. And here are Greg and Dan.
Welcome to the Colts and the Steelers Superfan Battle, a special Thanksgiving evening edition. I'd like to welcome Dan, our Colts Superfan here.
Hey, Greg, how's it going?
Pretty good, Dan. I'd like to take a second here and wish your son Lincoln a happy birthday. Number, two?
Yeah, and now he's 2 years old, and he keeps asking me, what's that? And I was really looking forward to him asking that on Thursday night before I got wind of the Andrew Luck concussion. So I don't know if this is a color rush game, but if it is, I don't think Andrew Luck's even going to be allowed to watch it with all those bright colors.
Well, you just let Lincoln know that we got a scholarship waiting for him to play point guard at Pitt. So.
Ooh, I like free money.
So this Steelers and Colts matchup has taken a little bit of the luster off with the Luck concussion. I think I had harshly compared them without Luck to the Cleveland Browns with a better center. I'm not expecting much of a fight this week without Luck. Do you have any reasons that I'd be totally wrong on that?
No, it's not going to be a pretty game. The last couple of times these teams have met, the Steelers have had their way with them. They put up points pretty easily, and I think this is one of Ben Roethlisberger's one of his annual regular season games that resemble a preseason game. He's able to pick apart that secondary or lack thereof pretty easily. The Colts showed some life on defense last week in the first half, but I think a lot of that was the bye week and having that extra week of prep. But this week, I don't know that they'll have that level of preparation to attack Ben and the Steelers offense. They're a little more complete than what we saw last week from Tennessee.
Those are valid points, yeah. So let's take an opportunity here then, since we don't get to do this that often. Let's pivot away from the actual game since it doesn't have the marquee player. And just mention that real quick. I would take, if I was picking the game with Luck, I would have taken the Colts with Luck. So, I mean, that's how big of a swing is. I don't think it's a competitive game without him. But pivoting off that, maybe into something a little bit more interesting than this matchup, let's talk about the AFC South a little bit in general. And let's talk about what you see, how you see it shaking out, or what are the marquee games coming up that you're kind of excited for. Because that division is really tightened up. I think the Texans are 6-5 leading the division, and the Colts are on their heels at 5-5. And the Texans, I know this week are playing San Diego, and then they have Green Bay, and they actually have a matchup with the Colts. So what are you expecting to happen in the next couple weeks there?
Yeah, the Texans are actually 6-4. But I think that they keep their one game lead this week. San Diego's so close to winning so many games, and I have to think they're a better team than Houston is. Houston had a decent performance in Mexico against the Raiders, but they let themselves down at the end of the game. So I think San Diego can win that one and keep Indy a game behind. And, gosh, if Indy can just hang on with Luck the next couple of games and somehow manage a 1-1 record, get them back in time for the Jets, I think they can make a run. They still have two division games left at home. One of them's Houston, and they controlled most of that game in Houston. So I think they, I don't want to say lock, but I think they're shoo-in to get that victory against Houston at Indy. Right now, Houston's sitting at 3-0 in the division. If they don't get a tough loss to either Tennessee or Jacksonville, I don't know how the tiebreaker goes against them. And I keep saying it. I think going back to that first game that Indy blew their lead against Houston, it's going to come back and haunt them. And it might come down to the wire, but I don't know. I think that that game's going to end up being the difference in the division.
Well, you kind of have some interesting things too. Like, so you got Pitt this week with for Indianapolis, but then next week you have the Jets. After that, you have the matchup with Houston, which is probably a must-win on the schedule. And then your last three are kind of interesting with at Minnesota, at Oakland, and Jacksonville. At Minnesota, I mean, you don't know what Minnesota team you're going to see week to week. And at Oakland in Week 16, if things keep going the Raiders' way, that might be where they're going to sit everybody. So, I mean, I see a lot of wins on the Colts schedule, or at least hypothetical wins. And the real interesting undertone of this whole division is in the last 3 weeks, I feel like Jacksonville plays every team in the division. And no matter what happens these next 3 weeks, those last 3 weeks of the season, they really play spoilers, even though they're 2-8.
Yeah, and their coach might be coaching for his job, too, at that point. So they'll put up a few good weeks. I think that the Raiders head coach, Jack Del Rio, has experienced firsthand what happens when you sit players at the end of the year. It doesn't pan out very well in the playoffs, as he witnessed that against his years with Peyton Manning in the division. So I'd be surprised if he sits anybody, especially for a game against a team that you potentially can eliminate from the playoffs. I think you got to do that any chance you get to. But, yeah, the last few weeks should be interesting. Minnesota, like you said, week to week, who knows what they're going to get. Sam Bradford's not great, so I don't think he'll have much success carving up the Colts secondary as we've seen with other teams. But it's who knows? Who knows what Colts defense will show up for that game? And who knows what their defense is going to do, too. They have a pretty good defense. And with that Colts offensive line, if there's no continuity between now and then, there's going to be some gaping holes in there that Minnesota can take advantage of for sure.
So I think that I really do think your division is going to come down between Houston and Indianapolis, and it's going to be tight to the end. hopefully for you guys, you get healthy luck back here and you can do it. Pivoting off that, let's talk about the AFC North real quick here. After this week with the Steelers playing the Colts, they have the Giants coming up, and then they're at Buffalo, and they finish up with the Bengals, Ravens, and Browns. Compared to the Ravens, that have a lot harder schedule. They have Cincinnati twice still. They have at New England still. They have against the Dolphins and against the Eagles. And also, they play the Steelers, of course. I feel like this is the Steelers division to win right now. I mean, do I have a reason not to be so optimistic?
Yeah, I think the fact that the Steelers are only 5-5 at this point in the season is part of the reason. But, you know, you're getting Bell back. He's getting into his groove. Last week they showed that, hey, we're going to do whatever it takes to win. And if that's giving the ball to Bell 30 times a game, that's what they're going to do. And, you know, if they keep him in the backfield, they have a receiver out of the backfield that's one of the best in the NFL at getting the ball in space and making defenders miss to get those extra yards. And then, you know, in my opinion, the best receiver in the game, Antonio Brown. I give him a little notch over Julio Jones just because of the fact that he can run the routes that he can. And he just seems to get open every time for Ben, and Ben trusts him. And, you know, maybe Ben's the reason I give him the nod over Julio, just because Ben can throw it to him, and Brown can make those catches pretty consistently. And then as they start to get healthy, bringing Wheaton back and bringing Sammy Coates back, I think they'll have enough firepower. And I think Ladarius Green's playing now too, right?
Yeah, his ghost is playing. That's basically
his ghost is playing. He left his brain in the locker room.
If it looks like it. he's done nothing. He's been the most disappointing free agent in Steeler history so far.
Gotcha.
The Steelers really have a problem. It's almost an embarrassment of riches in the past couple of years, you know, with Martavis Bryant factoring in so much, and Marcus Wheaton, who's now on the IR, you know, was developing until this year. Oh, they really don't have that other option in the offense, that second or that, you know, the second receiving option. They don't have that. And like Darius Green, the opportunity is there for him to do that. And I just don't see him doing that. He just doesn't seem to be in sync. He's never really practiced with the team until these last 2 weeks. Kind of weird to say that about a guy who's been in the league for 5 years. And, you know, he's supposedly this great talent, but he can't get on the field. And that's what Monty, our Raiders fan, warned me about in the offseason. But, you know, they're playing this guy out there at wide receiver, this Kobe Hamilton, who I've never heard of before last week. And he's getting red zone looks. So,
oh, wow.
I mean, Sammy Coates apparently can't catch because he has two broken fingers still. So maybe this long layoff will help him, but it's not looking good for them to have a balanced attack right now because you can blanket AB. So we're looking for that guy, Ladarius. Hopefully you're a hit.
Yeah, and the Steelers' schedule is definitely more favorable than Baltimore's down the stretch. They get the gamey game against Indy. They still play Cincinnati at Cincinnati, but they get the home game against Baltimore, which is huge. They get a home game against Cleveland, which they'll win. And at Buffalo is a little easier than at New England. So I give them the nod on schedule. And, you know, if they continue to feed the ball to Bell when it counts, I think that'll be enough to get them over the hump and give them the division.
Hope you're right. Well, with all this said, I have to give you one more thanks. We don't get to talk that much on the air, at least. But you pounding the drum this year for T.Y. Hilton has helped me in two fantasy leagues I've played in. So I got to give you credit there. You saw something in T.Y. over Moncrief and Dorsett. And I wonder, just to recap, you know, maybe call your own shot, pat yourself on the back a little bit. Why did you believe in T.Y. so much coming into the year?
Big thing for me was experience. He's a guy that's been with Luck since day one. His route running's gotten better every year, and the time and effort he puts into running routes and developing that chemistry with Luck, it's just a matter of time till it really showed up. I think there's still room for improvement. He's dropping a lot of passes this year, and he's playing through some injuries, but I mean, at this point of his career, it's not an excuse. He gets injured every year, but gosh, if he could just figure out how to stay healthy, keep those hamstrings and that knee intact, I think he's got room for improvement still. And, you know, I'm a jerk. I compared him to Antonio Brown. Not that I ever thought that he would get the numbers that Antonio Brown got, but just the way that he can run the routes and create some separation. And I just really thought he had some really high upside, and he's showing that upside this year, but he's got to be more consistent with his catches, and he has to stay healthy in order to ever even come close to the credit I'm willing to give him. But Moncrief's had a great year, though, too. He's really been the big red zone threat, and, you know, if he didn't have the injuries he's had, he would probably be the top fantasy receiver for Indy. But he's been injured, so Luck's been forced to look other places.
Well, it was good. It was a good call of your shot at the beginning of the year. It helped me out, so.
Yeah, you're welcome. I expect PayPal at the end of the year for all your winnings with that.
Well, I mean, just so we pull back the curtain here, I do play in a league named after you, and I wonder how many championships you've got in that league. Maybe I'll just, instead of payment, I'll just stop bringing that up.
Yeah, the league's still young, so no need to rush to judgment. I've set it up so I don't get called out for colluding against my league mates. And I think here in about another 2 or 3 months, we'll see if I can tally one up or not.
All right. I like the optimism.
Awesome. Well, it was great chatting with you, and hopefully I can tell you about my championship here in a couple of months.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. Again, wish Lincoln a happy birthday and happy Thanksgiving to all you football heads out there. Let's throw it back to Jay.
Yeah, we're being nice. You guys can go into the food coma a little early on Thursday night.
unless you want to see 200 yards rushing. So.
Yeah, by Frank Gore, right?
Future Hall of Famer, Frank Gore.
There you go.
So I agree once again with our super fans. If we knew Andrew Luck was going to play, and at the time of this recording, all we know is that he's in concussion protocol, and the likeliness of him to come out of that for a Thursday game is slim. So without Andrew Luck, I think this is the Steelers. I don't see any chance that the Colts can pull this off. 9-point favorites now for the Steelers, according to BetDSI.com. And I think without Andrew Luck, that's about right. James.
Oh, yeah. I mean, going back to Monty's joke about being able to play for the Minnesota Vikings, I mean, Indianapolis has expanded their search from the greater Indianapolis area to the entirety of the Midwest, looking for anybody who's willing to fill in that secondary. Pittsburgh hasn't looked great this year, but, you know, Andrew Luck was their one chance of winning this game, and he's gone. So I'm going to take the Steelers.
Patrick?
Yeah, you kind of have to take the Steelers, but as much as I hate to do it.
And Monty?
I just don't see the Ravens running away with that division. The Steelers have got to win, and, I mean, there's no way they can do it. They can lose to a Andrew Luck-less Colts team.
Yeah, I would agree. So it's funny because to my recollection, and of course my recollection is always hazy, I felt like the evening game was always the more competitive of the three games lately on Thanksgiving. This year it appears to be flip-flopped around, where I think the early games are going to provide a lot more excitement than that late game. By the way,
the Dallas game is right smack in the middle of falling asleep on the couch time, too.
Well, it's always been right in the middle of falling asleep on the couch time.
That's true.
Remember, go to betdsi.com, use our promo code FANUP10 to get that extra $10. And of course, the 100% deposit or the 100% bonus on your first deposit. To place your wagers, betdsi.com. FANUP10 is the promo code to use. Email us nextfanup@gmail.com. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, all of our written previews are available at nextfanup.wordpress.com, on top of a whole bunch of other great stuff like our fantasy hot takes and so much more. So check us out, nextfanup.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening. The rest of our games, we're going to be posting that preview on Thanksgiving Day. So enjoy your Thanksgiving. Have an extra slice of pie for me. And with that, here's Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.